Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Some councils are auditing schools and urging a ban on the terms boy and girl.
For those who are in an open or polyamorous relationship, your relationships are holy.
A gay black woman's victim status is less than that of a black trans woman, who ranks below a black Muslim trans woman.
We don't want to just win the argument about sexuality. We want to use this as a gospel opportunity.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Spanning the globe.
Other
bringing
insane
you stories
words,
from around the world that don't tie together.
That we can't put anywhere else, so we'll throw here.
See, you're proving my point exactly. There's no point in repeating myself again. We all know what this is about. It's a hap-dash, slap-together bunch of stuff with no discernible segue except it's somewhere from around the globe.
That narrows it down a little.
This is Wretched Radio. To Poland we go. I hold in my never-before-nicotine-stained fingers a picture of a copy of a booklet titled Ni Kapnij Z Wapalak. And if you're from Poland, I apologize profusely. Some brothers and sisters in Poland have decided to translate Don't Stub Your Toe, it's an evangelistic booklet that we have here at Wretched, into Polish. There it is, guys. There's a male and female version. The leg with the four toes stubbing right there.
There they are.
One's a hairy leg and one's not hairy leg. Although, I guess depending on what country you're from, you wouldn't know the difference. At any rate, it's Don't Stub Your Toe, available now in, well, it's not quite available, but at least I've got the cover, Poland.
No, Todd. That is Target marketing. That is for hardcore cyclists.
Ah.
And swimmers.
And swimmers.
Competitive
okay.
Swimmers.
Does doing that really speed up your time that much? Is there that much drag involved? Nevertheless, do what you got to do. Thrilled to pieces. Don't stub your toe. Now in Polish. I think it's in somewhere between 8 and 10 languages around the globe, give or take. Can't really keep track of them, but thrilled to pieces that people are trying to reach the world with the gospel, that they are trying to go out and at least give them some literature that clearly contains the gospel. And I don't mind telling you, we can't be too thorough with our gospel presentations, especially if you live in the Bible Belt. I am telling you, the kids, they've all heard different forms of the gospel. They just can't tell you what the gospel is. Do not shy away from the details. You do not need to just gloss over it and, oh, I got it out. Take your time. I think that I'd rather be cut off slowly working through the gospel. Now, I'm not talking about a 3-hour dissertation, but working through it in a way that we're not rushing through this because it's too important, it's too urgent, and it's too good. I'd rather have it cut off halfway through than to just bing, bing, bing over the top. And that's what it sounds like. You just mark my words. If you just gloss over the gospel, you're going to hear this sound in the distance going bing, bing, bing. You're going to think of me. Maybe. To England we go. The Guardian. Sex is for married heterosexual couples only, says Church of England. Ha ha ha. Babylon Bee. This isn't the Guardian. Those jokesters. Who are they kidding? Wait a second. This is actually accurate. Huh. Well, something must be wrong here in the Church of England. For Christians, this is from Pastoral Guidance. For Christians, marriage, that is the lifelong union between a man and a woman, contracted with the making of vows, remains the proper context for sexual activity. Huh. Will wonders never see this? Did I mention this is the Church of England right here? Yeah. It adds sexual relationships outside heterosexual marriage are regarded as falling short of God's purpose for human beings. Wow. The Church of England.
Sin would be a shorter way to say that, right?
Well, yeah, they would. Yeah. It would be, but that might be a little offensive.
I will take what I can get here.
Sadly, the Church of England does not permit same-sex marriage, but it allows clergy to be in same-sex civil partnerships as long as they are sexually abstinent. What is the point of that, I would ask? I mean, come on. A part of marriage is the procreation, that activity Why do you need to be in that sort of a relationship? It's that's too profoundly intimate of a relationship to be sanctioned by a church. That's not healthy, good, or wise, and it hints at you can still have those feelings, no problem. Just don't do that act. Hold on, there's all kinds of acts and thoughts that can go with it. And a civil partnership being affirmed by the church is going to simply affirm those actions and thoughts that are sinful. Was reading the history of marriage. Have you ever tried to do that? Rot's a rock. It's not easy to figure out the history of marriage because there isn't, believe it or not, a ton written about it. But it seems that, historically, by checking as many of the external documents as possible outside of the Torah, the Old Testament, we do not have record of a marriage ceremony happening by a priest or inside of a synagogue. It apparently, I don't know what the service was, but the early church adopted that. And that is the way they got married. It wasn't being done in the church or by pastors. Now, I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm just telling you that's the history, it appears, of marriage. Furthermore, in the early church, they never married a same-sex couple. They never married somebody who was a believer and somebody who is not a believer. We just do not have a record of that because they did not do that. This particular article, rather provocative, said maybe it's time the church gets out of the marriage business. And I got to tell you, it's a pretty compelling argument because a civil partnership done by the government for the sake of tax advantages so you can visit your loved one in the hospital or any of a number of canards that were thrown our way, okay, go ahead and do that. Because the church apparently somehow let the government or let society do marriages without sanctioning them per se. The wedding vows that we see, we don't have those, even though I believe that we see the first wedding vows that we tend to use today in 21st century civilization, that a man shall leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, that one flesh relationship, that is all Genesis language. That is Genesis 2. That is Adam's wedding vow to Eve that we see. And so we've duplicated that, but we didn't see that in the early church. And this fellow, sorry I can't remember his name, was saying maybe it's time that we let the government do civil partnerships. Do it for the tax. Go ahead and do that. Call it what you want to, but we will do a religious ceremony separate from you. Because the problem that we are currently running into when the pastor is doing the marriage ceremony on behalf of the state, which is what he is doing when he announces based on the authority from whom? Not God. Not from the word of God, but from the state of fill in the blank, he's acting as a representative of the government. Why not let the government do its thing and we'll do our thing where a couple really does the important. We would do that as, oh, that's the tax thing. Yeah. We want to take advantage of that for as long as they offer that. Yeah, so we did that. We got the paperwork done. That's all. But then we got married. We got the wedding license. Yeah, we did the government hoops. But that's not what makes it a marriage that is godly. By the way, God esteemed those marriages that were done outside of the church and outside of a synagogue or outside of a tabernacle or temple. They were valid marriages. God esteemed those to be valid. Because he tells us in 1 Corinthians 7 that if you are married to somebody, you got married as pagans, you can't get divorced from them now that you're a believer. Which tells us, I know it's not directly stated, but it does tell us that when you got married, you're married in the eyes of God. So what do we do with marriage now? I suspect it'll get figured out. I suspect it'll get shaked out for the church as things continue to regress, because we're not progressing. As they continue to regress, it'll shake out someplace. Church of England making one good statement at least about what marriage should be, and yet, on the other hand, not so good. Nigeria, happening all the time from Christian Post. Nigerian pastor, maybe you saw the video where he was praising God in a ransom video. Just had his head cut off. Boko Haram. the Reverend Lawan Ondimi. I hope I've said that right. Pray for your brothers and sisters around the globe because they are getting shellacked, and it is real. There was another mass beheading. You remember the one with the orange jumpsuits? Who can ever forget those images? I saw another one recently. I think we were looking at different photos or different images from Bible League International. It's real. And if we aren't praying at all for our persecuted brothers and sisters, that they would endure, that they would even find joy in the persecution, count it all joy, my brethren, said James, when we're being persecuted. If we don't pray that God would deliver them or keep them, protect them, sustain them, comfort them, provide for them, encourage them while they are being persecuted, yikes. In the meantime, the Hallmark Channel boss stepping down. I think we all know why, don't we? I thought this was all about tolerance and love. Unless you contradict our values, this is Wretched Radio. No doubt if you've spent even a minute listening to conservative media, you have been whipped into a frenzy. The problems with our society, the collapse of a culture, the statistics, the legislation. We got to do something about this, but then we're never told what to do. I believe the greatest social ill of our time is the war against the unborn. Millions of children being killed in our country during our lifetime. And we can do something about it, and we can practically get engaged in the war for life. Preborn.org/wretched, $28 will provide an ultrasound 80% of the time. It saves the life of a child. Let's not just be righteously indignant. Let us do something to save lives. The women hear the gospel, they receive support, and they choose life. $28 for an ultrasound. Preborn.org/wretched.
We are proud to announce our newest addition to the Drive-By series, Drive-By False Teaching. And just as the name implies, Drive-By False Teaching will give you the tools you need to distinguish the true from the almost true and contend earnestly for the faith.
Over and over again, these same heresies keep cropping up. And you'll notice that virtually every kind of false teaching you can name stems from one of these five errors that we're going to look at. Actually, these same heresies, they're not extinct. They may be ancient, but they are not extinct. And these deal with real life issues that touch you and me, and often try to infuse themselves even into the life of our church. We need to be familiar with them, and we need to know how to refute them.
The gospel of Jesus Christ is glorious and well worth defending. Drive-By False Teaching will help you defend our doctrines. Get your copy today at wretched.org/false-teaching. That's wretched.org/false-teaching.
What two pastors go through to bring Bibles to their parishioners in the Philippines.
Two pastors, they had to rise up 3 a.m. and walk for 2 hours. And after that, they have to ride a bangka across the river for an hour and then walk again for 3 hours just to get hold of those precious Bibles. They will return in the same way again to bring those Bibles to people whom they are ministering.
That is what they go through. What must you and I do to bring those Bibles to believers around the globe? Pick up our phones. Call Bible League International. Would you do that right now? $5 per Bible. Could you send 7 per month? Call Bible League International right now, and they will be delivered to the hands of a believer. 1-800-YES-WORD. Just giving you a chance to write that down or to call it. 1-800-YES-WORD to bring Bibles to believers through Bible League International. 1-800-YES-WORD.
Sometimes simple is best. The Mission Ball is simply a soccer ball covered with biblical text, a thorough law and gospel presentation, and an effective tool for drawing a crowd, making a connection with people, inviting curiosity, and ultimately creating opportunities to proclaim Christ. With your support, the Mission Ball can get into the hands of more lost and dying souls. Go to themissionball.org. That's themissionball.org.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teaches us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the wisdom of God. The wisdom of man says we can earn God's favor through good works, but the wisdom of God is made known in Jesus Christ, God in human flesh, put to death on the cross to grant us forgiveness we cannot earn. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Don't laugh. This is Wretched Radio. The millennials, they are indeed different than the boomers. So are Gen X. So are Gen Z. Aren't all generations, seriously, aren't we all different in some way, shape, or form? Some of it good, some of it not so good. I will say this again. I learn from watching, studying the conversations of millennials and Gen, whatever the next one is, Gen X, I guess it would be.
Z.
They have a way of talking that I think we Christians are supposed to talk like, and I'm not even kidding about that, man. They have a way to say things to one another that it just doesn't come across as aggressive or snarky. And I think we can learn from that. We should never sound that way. It doesn't mean that we can't say hard things. It doesn't mean that we can't even say sharp things. But it should be done in such a way that it doesn't sound like we're saying, I hate you, and they have a knack for it. I don't know what it is, but they do. There is another observation about the communication of this next generation. I am not understanding the humor exactly. If you have ever watched, let's say you're from the North American continent, you watch British TV or Australian TV. Humor's different. And, for instance, Australians don't jump for joy at all of the humor that we do in the States.
No.
Why? There's different styles of humor, and it kind of depends on which way you were trained. I'm telling you, in Western civilization, the humor of the younger millennials and the Gen Z and Gen Xers, it is different, daddy-o. Was at Starbucks, just doing research, wanted to make sure that we didn't need to boycott him or something. So, you know, and bought a cup of coffee just because I didn't want to, you know, be that guy. And we were inside of the Starbucks, and I was with my daughter, who struck up a conversation with the young lady behind the counter. And I sat and watched it, and I understood ne'er a whit of it. They were slinging. And I know that they were amused with one another because they were doing jokes, but it's like, huh, they don't even hit the punchline exactly the same way. That they don't have the 1-2-3 sort of affair. It's different. And then it's like this, right? So then, boom, without even speaking, and somehow they're communicating to each other. Just different. And I think we would be wise to study them and learn from them, just like we encourage them to study us and learn from us. I think that can be a two-way street. Now, I grant you, one of the streets might be wider than the other. Nevertheless, I think we're missing the boat if we don't learn from these whippersnappers. What? Why was your mouth agape, Tony? It was simply agog. Was there a reason for that?
No, I thought I was the only one that noticed that.
That what?
That you can listen. I listen to younger folks talking and laughing and having a great time. And I have
no idea.
No idea. Not a clue.
Not bad. Just different. That's all. And I wish I could articulate it because I can't get my brain around it. That their ability to say, if I were going to say to somebody, take your elbows off the table, it would come across like I was being a boomer, condescending. They say it to each other, and it's like, did you just say I love that person? Because I thought you wanted them to move their elbow, but it sounded so nice and friendly. How did you do that exactly? There's stuff to be learned. Millennial friendship weddings are a thing. Instead of getting married, this is basically a domestic partnership. You have to live together. You can't be married to anyone else. Once the person walks down the aisle with someone else, the domestic partnership automatically dissolves. Designed to give same-sex partners the same benefits, economic and non-economic, as married couples without their actually getting married. This is for now people of opposite genders are doing this. They want the bennies, but they don't want that title marriage. Now, whether it has the romantic component or not, doesn't really disclose in this particular article. But here's my question, and it's sincere. I'm not trying to be snarky. This arrangement that the pagans want to do, would we be okay with that if it didn't have the idea of marriage, which is this God-ordained institution? Now, I think that we would say, no, that's, if you're still living together, that's problematic, that's bad. But would it be less troublesome to us? Would we feel less like the institution of marriage was being attacked if they just called it that? Stop calling it marriage. Call it something, just to say it's our legal deal that we do. Oh, I'm legal dealed. Well, what's that ring about? It's a legal deal ring. Okay. Would that make us feel any better? I don't know. I suspect this will shake itself out. This will land somewhere. Where? I don't know. But it will. In the meantime, this is some research that was done by the Journal of Medical Ethics. Two researchers with divergent views regarding the morality of abortion have published a paper concluding that unborn human beings likely are able to feel pain at an earlier point than previous research has suggested. That isn't good news at all. And might I suggest, while this information can be used in some ways, that this is not the thrust of the pro-life argument, that it hurts a child at that age. Pain is not the determiner of what is life. Pain does not determine if you are a human being or not. You go to the dentist with a toothache. They numb you up. They drill on your tooth. You don't feel pain. Therefore, it's not a tooth, or you're not a person. Has nothing to do with what humanity is. At this moment, I'm not feeling pain. Am I not a person? So let's use this, if we need to, in some arenas of debate. But this is not the biggie. Furthermore, an article from USA Today, I was an abortionist. The abortion industry isn't willing to prioritize patient safety. This woman who claims I killed more people than Ted Bundy, gulp. Dr. Kathy Altman, now pro-life, she's pointing out that these clinics, these abortion clinics, they aren't always very cleanly. Is that why abortion should stop? No. Abortion should stop because it's the intentional taking of an innocent whole human being, not because the facilities are dirty. Nevertheless, we can talk about this, but if we think this is the gotcha aha, it's not. She writes, I stopped doing abortions, but I remain pro-choice. She was finding herself doing abortions and realizing, wait a second, I'm saving a baby's life at the same age down the hall and then taking the same baby's life down the other end of the hall because mom doesn't want the baby? So she stopped, but she was pro-choice. Over time, I saw in my OBGYN practices young girls flourish who had not chosen to abort, and older, more educated patients who had aborted, they struggled psychologically. Is that our gotcha argument? No, it's not. It demonstrates that abortion is bad because it's the intentional taking of an innocent human life. The consequence is women will have psychological challenges. Our argument isn't don't do abortion because it produces psychological challenges. Don't do abortion because it's the intentional taking of an innocent whole human being. Gradually, I began to see the feminist narrative that abortion empowers women as increasingly flimsy. Is that our argument? Well, women don't really have rights because they struggle emotionally. No, it's the intentional taking of a whole innocent human being. Ultimately, I could not shake the realization that the only thing that decided the fate of the baby was whether she was wanted or not. Is that our argument? Well, no. It's not. It doesn't matter how many people want or don't want what is inside of the mother's womb. The issue is what is inside of these mother's womb. For years, many abortion clinics have gotten away with shoddy practices. Cleanliness issues. Not our argument. A patient who came to me for complications from a late-term abortion said she was kept in a cold room overnight without a blanket during an induction abortion. She was forced to give birth in a toilet the next morning, brace yourself, only to watch her still-living baby drown. The argument for life is Imago Dei. No matter the size, level of dependency, development, location, feeling pain, heartbeat, brain waves, all ancillary. The issue is what is inside of a mother's womb, regardless of all of those issues, is an image bearer of Almighty God. It is a whole, innocent human being. That is our argument. And as long as it's still, barely, the month of January, I would encourage you still to get pro. If you want to be equipped with the pro-life defense and argument and rightly stating the cause and the gospel, I encourage you to get Life is Best. It's at wretched.org, and it has a workbook, a study guide to go with it. I don't know of a pro-life apologetic that is more biblical and more powerful and more helpful than Life is Best, available at wretched.org. That's not why I brought this up, by the way. Sneak that in.
Sure.
Not that I feel any shame for sneaking a little bit of shame, but not. See, you guys, could you please say sure like a millennial, Tony? Say sure like a millennial.
Sure. Sorry, I cut off Tony.
That didn't work at all. This is Wretched Radio.
SOS Ministries wants to see a movement take place within God's church in Uganda. They want to see God-fearing, Christ-proclaiming churches rise up across the country and impact the whole of the Ugandan society. To reach out nationwide, they have the Ministry of Church Strengthening and the Shepherd's Training Center to thoroughly equip indigenous pastors. But without the consistent support of God's people, none of this is possible. If you can help support SOS Ministries, go to sosministries.com. sosministries.com. This is Wretched Radio. Hi, I'm Tony Verkennis. According to a spokesman for the Emancipation Center for Crisis Victims in Nigeria, Muslim Fulani herdsmen have killed two Christians in separate attacks in Plateau State this month, in addition to 13 Christians from the same denomination killed on January 8th. Herdsmen invaded Turok Village, that's in Ryom County, on January 20th, and killed Reuben Bullis, a 25-year-old member of the Church of Christ in Nations. In Gako Village, also in Ryom County, another Kosan member was killed by herdsmen on January 1st. On January 8th, 13 Kosan members were slain in Plateau State's Kulban Village in Mangu County. In addition, herdsmen killed a Christian woman and her baby daughter in Plateau State's Bokas County late in December. Fulani herdsmen have also kidnapped at least 4 Christians in the last month. Nigeria ranking 12th on Open Doors 2020 World Watch List of countries where Christians suffer the most persecution, but they are second in the number of Christians killed for their faith behind Pakistan. And we are praying for our brothers and sisters. Franklin Graham is scheduled to preach the gospel in 8 cities across the United Kingdom later this year, but one of those stops is a bit in jeopardy after the venue canceled the booking over his biblical views on LGBTQ issues. ACC Liverpool, an arena and conference center, dropped Graham and said in a statement, "Over the past few days, we have been made aware of a number of statements which we consider to be incompatible with our values." Graham was scheduled to preach in Liverpool on June the 12th. A Change.org petition that labeled Graham a homophobic hate preacher had gathered more than 350 signatures as of this morning. Liverpool's mayor, too, wants the event canceled. On the petition, it reads, "We fear that with such a high-profile event gaining traction, Graham's appearance may incite hateful mobilization and risk the security of our LGBTQ plus community." I am curious, though, how many riots and how much violence have Christians started at events like this? If anyone knows the number, I'd really appreciate it if you'd share it with me. I would really like to know. As of today, Liverpool remains on the tour schedule. The location on the website, however, is now listed as TBA. And if you missed it, the Trump administration has reversed an Obama-era decision to deny Texas federal funds for a women's health program that excludes abortion providers. Texas lost the money in 2011 because the state refused to allow Planned Parenthood to participate in the Healthy Texas Women program. Now that the current administration has reopened the funding, the program could receive up to $350 million. To provide health care for more than 200,000 women annually. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Tony Verkennis.
books of the Bible. The gospel is present throughout all of Scripture, beginning with the book of Genesis. Immediately after the fall, God promises a Messiah who will crush the head of the serpent. Even in the Garden of Eden, God was preparing the means of our salvation through Jesus Christ. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
A perfect presentation with a perfect resolution and a perfect plan. Nah, but it's a start. This is Wretched Radio. I don't have to go to San Francisco drive-through. Well, not even a major city anymore. And we see a problem that Jesus, this does not give us permission to ignore it, but an issue that Jesus promised would be with us, and that is the poor, specifically the homeless. What are we to do? There are people that are trying to figure out a solution, but without the Bible, without the gospel, they are just flailing away. Case in point, visit San Francisco. There are people who are homeless for a myriad of reasons that are, well, they're doing a pretty good job of making the town a mess. Literally, the drug use, the needles that are lying around, because the government has determined we're going to give homeless people needles so that they don't get some sort of HIV, and they don't get some sort of diabetes, or hepatitis, rather. They give them needles? Is that the solution? We don't want to be mean to them, so we allow them to use the streets and the sidewalks as bathrooms. We don't want to hassle them, so we don't arrest them when they break laws and steal from stores. They don't shoplift, it seems. Too many reports. They just take stuff because they know the police won't do anything about it other than maybe just take it away from them if they can catch them. Can we do better? Well, the answer to that question might be found in part by an article. I remember reading this back in Ought 13. Nevertheless, it's a history of institutionalizing people with mental illnesses. Why don't we do that anymore? Is that the best solution? For your consideration, this is from James Panero, A New Moral Treatment: Humane Institutionalization Can Help the Mentally Ill and Protect Society. Going back to 1850 and 1900, this is when mental institutions were built. Speaking to our one-time dedication to caring for the mentally ill, almost all were designed by the Kirkbride Plan, named for Pennsylvania physician Thomas Story Kirkbride. He wrote a treatise on the role of architecture and landscape in treating mental disorders. He felt that if we could build beautiful places for these image bearers of God, it might calm them and soothe them and help them. Called moral treatment, to provide a calming refuge from the gutters and the jails and the almshouses back then, that had been the default place to take care of people with challenges. Let's make them beautiful for these people. It will calm them down. From the article, in the middle of the 20th century, asylums became grossly overcrowded, and invasive treatments around the public aroused the public concern. And the moral treatment came to seem immoral. Isn't that true? And isn't this fascinating how societal values change based on time and influence and peer pressure, sociological studies, and just the arc of history? From 1850 to 1900, we went, we got to do better. Instead of throwing these people into dank dungeons, horrible treatment, strapping them to beds, let's build a beautiful place for them. That to me is progress. Well, they became overcrowded, and there became some issues inside of the institutions that we did not like. And the response was, these things are now immoral. So this whole who's on the right side of history routine is a little bit of a, no, it's a lot bit of a canard. The eventual result was the process known as deinstitutionalization, which steadily ejected patients from what they called asylums. Instead of liberating the mentally ill, however, deinstitutionalization left them, like the asylums that once sheltered them, in ruins. So we've returned to pre-Kirkbride conditions, And these homeless people live on the margins of society, sleeping on the streets, doing harm to themselves, their families, to the public, terrorizing communities, disorder, violence, defecation in public. Our failure to care for them recalls the inhumane era that preceded the rise of the state institutions. So we've tried both, and both seem to be failing. At what point now, 100 and some years into this current way to approach mental illness and homelessness, will we say that this thing has failed? Leaving people to themselves, providing them needles, syringes on the streets, maybe isn't the best way to do this. It seems the only alternative is institutionalization, and yet we've seen there were abuses there. I don't know. How's about we reevaluate the institutional approach and get rid of the abuses? Just an idea. It seems to me we should at least be considering it and not shut down for simply mentioning it. Isn't that the argument today? Oh, you wait. You want these people to be locked up? Well, call it what you will, but that's a straw man. Is your system better? Point to a homeless person on the street. You're telling me that's good for them? Well, they like being there. Perhaps, but just because somebody likes a behavior doesn't mean that the behavior is good, and that might just be the rub right there. These days, you cannot suggest that any lifestyle is better than another lifestyle. Living underneath a bridge in Atlanta, where you start a fire to stay warm and then burn down the bridge, is as valid a lifestyle as living in the suburbs, getting a degree, getting married, staying married, having kids, working sun up till sundown. That is just as valid a lifestyle. And don't you suggest that yours is better? Well, there are some lifestyles that are better, but that is a part of our postmodern struggle, is it not? We spent fortunes building serene landscapes composed of substantial brick edifices that resembled, frankly, palatial estates. The Kirkbride plan created protective worlds for patients, encouraging patients to participate in social activities, games, crafts, sported their own baseball diamonds, golf courses, bakeries, bowling alleys, ice cream shops, dairy farms, gardens, and stages for plays and other performances. We were building Dollywood for these people because we cared for these people, because we wanted them to have better, even if they didn't recognize it. It is better. But in the 20th century, a shadow fell over the Kirkbride asylums. The doctors began using more invasive procedures, insulin shock therapy, insulin coma therapy, same thing. In the 1930s, electroshock therapy arrived, exported from Italy, inducing seizures to alter brain chemistry in patients with depression and schizophrenia. By the way, don't know if you're aware of this, but electroshock therapy has quietly returned to psychotherapy. People will argue the results of it, but nevertheless, it is being used. They believe more cautiously than in the past. I'm not telling you it's good or bad. I'm just telling you they're using it. 1949, the Portuguese neuropsychiatrist Egas Moniz won a Nobel Prize for developing the frontal lobotomy, which we know is not good. Walter Freeman, a clinical neurologist, popularized the treatment through his own outpatient procedure, which came to be known as the transorbital or ice pick lobotomy, performing a 10-minute operation, inserting a long metal rod around the eyeballs of his patients and penetrated, stirred, and severed their frontal brain matter 3,500 times. Among the patients, you know this story. Smile a little while for me. Rosemary Kennedy. It was done when she was 23 years old, who wound up severely disabled in 1941. Her siblings then embarked on a crusade against institutionalization and invasive treatment, joining the chorus, civil libertarians, conscientious objectors. Starting in the 50s, these critics could tout powerful new antipsychotic drugs like Thorazine, instead of institutionalization. We know the problem with that. People on the streets won't take their medication. By temporarily blocking receptors in the dopamine pathways, the drugs presumably could control the problem, seeming to obviate the need for separating the mentally ill from the rest of society. Critics of institutionalization protested, too, about the overcrowding. By mid-century, some psychiatric wards designed to contain 50 to 60 patients were struggling to accommodate twice that many. 1946, Life magazine ran a photo essay subtitled, "Most U.S. Mental Hospitals Are a Shame and a Disgrace." And on it goes. And so the public was trained, institutions bad. The alternative, let's try to give them medication and let them wander the streets. We'll feed them along the way. Let them live wherever they want to. Empty themselves, relieve themselves wherever they choose, and provide them needles to make sure that while they're feeding their drug habit, they don't get sick. What do we do? What do we do with this? Well, I don't think the answer is a simple one. There are so many. The institutions would have to be so big. Nevertheless, let us at least not let people shame us for at least bringing up some alternative to what I consider to be a cruel current system. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for being here today. Glad you would spend part of it listening to Wretched Radio. Thank you to our gospel partners as well. You're the folks that allow us to, well, do the wretched things we do. Radio, TV, internet, and the resources. Speaking of which, our latest Road Trip to Truth is coming soon. Road Trip to Truth, a video series hosted by John Fabares, went out to college campuses talking with this younger generation about the tough issues that they face and sharing the gospel with them. Road Trip to Truth will be coming to the Wretched store near you very soon at wretched.org. This is a very depressed, anxious, and lost generation, and hopefully Road Trip to Truth will help you understand how to witness to this generation and share the gospel of hope in Jesus Christ. So, be looking for Road Trip to Truth soon at the Wretched store. And if you would like to help make more resources like this available, go to wretched.org/donate and become a gospel partner. Because the more you give, the more we can give away. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Let's go to Eastern Europe for yet another great story coming out of the Tomorrow Clubs.
Andrea was left by her mother when she was 3 months old. The Tomorrow Club director decided to pray for this girl and she repented. She used to be a sad looking kid. Now seems like that smile never comes off her face.
So many kids are abandoned by parents who need to go to other countries to make a living. They donate their organs. They leave the kids. They are lost physically and spiritually, and the Tomorrow Clubs finds them. They teach them the gospel. They help them to memorize Bible verses. They even will help them with their family lives. It's a magnificent ministry, story after story coming out of Eastern Europe. $30 a month, 30 disciples. Tomorrow Clubs is the ministry. Would you please consider supporting a club of your own? Tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Does this sound familiar? It's Saturday night, and there you are on your computer, and you decide to watch a video of John MacArthur. And the next thing that you know, you're 3 hours deep in YouTube watching a baby giraffe trying to stand up. Hey, it's happened to all of us. Instead of watching random videos and losing all sense of time, we suggest visiting wretched.org. There are hundreds of hours of biblically-based TV and radio, and a library full of hand-picked content specifically for you. Over 2,400 30-minute TV programs with subjects ranging from abortion and apologetics to systematic theology and hermeneutics. Wretched's hour-long radio programs posted every day tackle tough issues that we all face today. That's not all. Every Monday, you can expect to hear Grace to You's Phil Johnson on Too Wretched for Radio with Todd. So the next time you're just wandering the web watching baby giraffe videos, head on over to wretched.org. Wretched.org.
Important dates in Christian history. 64 AD. After fire ravages Rome, Emperor Nero blames Christians and unleashes the first state-sanctioned persecution of Christians. Roman persecution would continue for 250 years until Emperor Constantine officially recognized and defended Christianity. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Do two words probably tell us everything we need to know. This is a Wretched Radio. Jimmy Carter, pretty much everything you need to know. Reading an article I haven't stumbled across for a long time, written back in 2013 by James Panero, A New Moral Treatment, How to Treat Homeless People. What is the Christian response? He didn't write it from a Christian perspective. I do believe he wrote it from a compassionate perspective. If you remember Charles Krauthammer, he also was one, not a Christian by any means, in fact, not a believer of any sort, said, hey, don't we owe it to these people to do better for them, even as they don't recognize what is better for them? The answer should be yes. Society's answer, no. Jimmy Carter, his Commission on Mental Health, said that letting people out of the asylums, go onto the streets with a prescription to make sure that they take their medication, is, quote, the greatest degree of self-freedom, self-determination, autonomy, dignity, and integrity of body, mind, and spirit for the individual. Is it? Is it kind to let somebody who does not know how to do life go, live autonomously? Doesn't Christian compassion say, no, we identify somebody's lifestyle as being bad, and when they're not able to rescue themselves, we rescue them from it? Now, I realize the massive scope of this problem. It is hardly one that is going to be dealt with by a church opening up a food bank, which, by the way, is, according to a lot of people, one of the worst things that we can do is just give a Band-Aid. In fact, a lot of people recommend don't give a sandwich to somebody. It is better that their stomach is so empty that they go to a place that will help them more holistically, that will help them spiritually, that will help them to get cleaned up and get trained and get a job and be a part of civilization, which we used to esteem as a better way to live. Jimmy Carter, among with many other progressives and liberals, stating, nope, we're just going to let these people go because that'll just allow them to be autonomous and free. Bad idea, Mr. President. And now we have a situation on our hands that is worse than what it was before we started to institutionalize institutions. Within a year of leaving institutional care, according to researchers, half of all mentally ill patients fail to take their prescribed antipsychotic medications. There's a surprise. 60% of patients discharged from state institutions were schizophrenic. They need help. Another 10 to 15% had been diagnosed with manic depressive illness or severe depression. Don't we care? This is one of those instances I think we conservatives can use the loaded gun the liberals have always aimed at us. Don't you care? Don't you care? Well, that's my question. Don't you care for these people on the streets? What have we done to help these people? Here's the answer to the people who love the idea of deinstitutionalization. You've institutionalized them. They're called jails. They're called prisons. The mentally ill people in prisons is staggering. And people inside of the prison system, they are complaining about it, and it's falling on deaf ears. Nobody is listening. They don't know what to do with these people or how to help them. They are merely keeping them safe from themselves and from others. They are dealing with the problem that our society is turning a blind eye to. Since deinstitutionalization, police and sheriff's departments have reported an overwhelming increase in mental illness-related calls. A 2011 survey of law enforcement officials reported that responding to these calls has become a major consumer of law enforcement resources nationally. Three times more seriously mental ill persons in jails and prisons than in hospitals. There's no long-term facilities. There are very few. Very, very few. And I mean, like, in the country, because everything is short term. A person who is struggling mentally or emotionally, who meets the criteria of short term care, it's typically murderous ideations or suicidal tendencies threatening suicide. They will try to keep them for give or take 10 days, sometimes a little bit longer, until those subside, and then back they go. Is that the best we can do? Is that all we've got for these people? And the answer is no. We let them then go. They break a law. They get arrested. And finally, after they've earned enough points, they find themselves in a prison. Is that kind? Now, to put them in with people who will take advantage of them and hurt them, no matter how you slice this apple, you're going to be dealing with some bad results here. It's hard. It's a tough issue. Can we do better than the current system? Many county sheriff's associations estimate that over a quarter of their jail population is mentally ill. I've heard higher. Los Angeles County Jail has become the largest de facto inpatient psychiatric facility in the United States. New York Rikers Island Prison Complex is the second largest. By the way, if you're one of those Christian ministries or a church that goes into prisons, salute. Stay at it. Stay faithful. Don't get discouraged. I think of my dear brother, yours too, Jimbo, James McMaster in Scotland. He's in Newcastle, and he is a street minister who ministers to people on the streets trying to help them, save them, get them into programs so that they can have a job and live in society. And in the meantime, he's going into the prisons to evangelize these people. I saw a special that was produced by the BBC of the prison that he goes into. Wow, is it rough and scary. And we're putting people who are mentally unstable right into that mess. To the liberals, I would say, don't you care for these people? Seems pretty cold-hearted to me. I should have been able to take more joy in that statement. Wasn't able to, but
not quite as much as you'd expect, is it?
No, not really. Proponents of deinstitutionalization claimed it would save money. But weigh those savings against the costs that must be borne by other facilities like emergency rooms, prisons, jails, syringe programs, nursing homes, relentlessly going through the hospital system, through courts, through jails, through social services, group homes. What's the cost of that? It's inefficient. $1 million Murray, a mentally ill homeless man who cost Nevada more than $1 million, mostly in emergency medical visits, as he rotated through the system for 10 years. The dollar burden that the mentally ill have piled on law enforcement agencies is staggering. Can we do better? What's the church to do? I don't have the answer, but maybe it starts by us leading the way and saying, can we please be more compassionate? Can we be more loving with these people? Can we please help these people beyond leaving them to their own wiles on the streets? In Atlanta, you heard, of course, about the fire that happened that brought the bridge down over the last week or so because it's been cold here. And when I say cold, it's below 50. It's freezing. To stay warm, the homeless people are starting fires under bridges. It's happening more and more. Don't we care about other citizens? Can't we do better? So to the progressive, to the liberal, I would say, where's your heart in this? Let's do better on this. Let's fix the problems that existed. I think the same conversation should happen with the foster system. I know there's good Christians and there's good people in the foster system, but I don't think anybody would be shocked at the announcement that the majority of people in the foster system, according to even people that run the foster system, it is nowhere near ideal. Bopping kids from home to home, instability to instability. Why not orphanages? The people who built these places a century or so ago were not knuckleheads. They weren't dumb. They had a compassionate heart and they cared. While the backers of deinstitutionalization recognize these problems, they've largely doubled down on their own solution. The very definition of insanity, calling for more funding of poorly managed local facilities that replace the asylums. By the way, the lifetime suicide rate, 1% for the general population, is over 10% for schizophrenics. 1955, 600,000 severely mentally ill patients were in the care of state psychiatric hospitals. By 2010, 43,000 state psychiatric beds remained available to the mentally ill. We were taking care of 600,000 people. Abuses, yes. Throw out the baby with the bathwater, not a good idea. What could lead us in this conversation? Who are these people? They're image bearers of God. We must treat them better than we currently do. Churches, can we lead the way? I think that's up to each individual church and every individual. But as we have these conversations, maybe this could be one of those social issues where the church stands out. Hey, hey, America, do we really want to be treating our people this way? Let me tell you what the Christian system is. It is loving these people, caring for these people, protecting from these people from themselves and from the dangers that are on the streets. Furthermore, recognizing there's a better way to live, and it is not in a gutter with a syringe sticking out of their arm. These people, furthermore, have an eternal soul, and they need to hear the gospel. Perfect? No. Complete? Not by any means, but perhaps a perspective on a subject with the history of dealing with mental illness in this country to demonstrate maybe our current system, this I'm going to take delight in, our current system is on the wrong side of history. That actually felt pretty good. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.